I am so excited for this half hour because we had a lot to talk about. This week, State Attorney General Keith Ellison announced a civil lawsuit against retail stalwart Fleet Farm. And the lawsuit alleges that Fleet Farm negligently sold guns to straw buyers. If you don't know what straw buyers are, they are people who buy something on behalf of another person in order to circumvent legal restrictions or enable fraud. Yeah, you know, people that give away guns to criminals and that sort of thing. But what's really interesting for me through all of this, these straw buyers have been doing this for a long time. And it was used in the fatal mass shooting last year of 7th Street Truck Park in St. Paul. Let me say that again. A gun bought by one of those straw buyers was used in the fatal mass shooting last year at the 7th Street Truck Park in St. Paul, Minnesota. So what constitutes a straw buyer? You heard my definition. But we also want to ask, why is this a growing issue when it comes to the overall problem of gun safety? Well, let me tell you who's joining us tonight. Rashmi Sinavaratna is joining me. And Rashmi is the Executive Director of Protect Minnesota, and she is joining us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline to talk all about this. Welcome, Rashmi. It's so glad to have you join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first of all, this is my first time hearing about Fleet Farm doing this. I did not stay on top of this, so forgive me for that. But Minnesota suing Fleet Farm over dangerous firearm sales is a really big, big deal to me. Is it a big deal for you as well?
Yeah, I think it is, just because this is a huge way in which guns are getting into Minnesota and getting into hands of criminals. So, you know, tackling this on at the retailer end of things is a huge step in kind of helping curb violence across the state.
You know, it says in an article that was written by NPR that in its complaint, the state alleges that four Fleet Farm retailers in Minnesota sold a total of 37 firearms to two people within a 16-month period. Who would do that? It's so disturbing to read that this actually happened. And if so, what can we do about it?
I mean, I think what we can do about it is what exactly Attorney General is doing, right, is to sue the retailers on it. And I'll just make a note, the reason it can happen is because federal law states that, you know, Fleet Farm has to go through the, like let's say a general manager has to go through the background check and go through the proper training. But each individual cashier who, you know, sells a gun or sells a firearm doesn't have to go through that. There's no legal requirement for that. And so this is how people can kind of get away with it, not even intending to.
It's almost as though our state and federal laws are just being overlooked when it comes to firearms. And if that is so, will we ever be able to get past this and stop it from happening?
I don't know that they're being overlooked as much as there's so many loopholes. And we've created this culture around guns that it's really hard to address it and to help people understand that we're talking about saving lives. No one's infringing on anyone's constitutional rights, but there are certain responsible measures that we have to take. You know, I hope that with the Supreme Court the way it is, the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, on their recent ruling in Bruin, they kind of shut down a lot of doors. But what I tell our constituents is any change has always come from community, right? It's always been community-driven, community-led. And so right now we're focusing on building community support around this idea that you can have a gun and you can be a legal gun owner, but we still need to have rules and regulations in place to ensure safety for everyone, and especially children.
But if people are, specifically Fleet Farm, if they're selling to straw buyers, we know that these are not people that should be getting the guns, that's for sure. They could be young people, older people. It's just that these straw buyers want to get it into the hands of someone who wants a gun, and there are plenty of young people who are looking for that. I've always thought if you're going to have a gun, you got to go through the due process. Is the due process still working?
I think the due process isn't strong enough. There's a lot of loopholes. One of the loopholes is, you know, when you do a permit to purchase or a permit to carry, if your local police department or sheriff's office can't get the results back from the federal government 3 days, they can just decide to give you the gun. We need to close that loophole. You need to wait until those results come back before you can give someone. So we have things in place. We just need to tighten those up. And I think one of them is looking at how can we end straw buying.
Who is to answer that question?
Our legislators, our elected officials who refuse to make any movement on this. I think that the general public often doesn't know that these loopholes exist. The Charleston church massacre, that was what happened. You know, he wasn't allowed to buy a gun, but the background search never came back and didn't come back early enough or fast enough, and he was able to get the guns. There's dire and fatal consequences, and so we need to hold our legislators accountable. Protect Minnesota is doing our job to educate people around the laws, the existing laws and the loopholes. But at the end of the day, we need legislators to understand that people's lives are more important than the next election win.
So, Rashmi, you really don't think that he understands that? You don't think they know that they're doing this? These legislators know what's happening, and they go silent. Right? Now, our attorney general is speaking up and out. Like Ellison said in an article, the state is seeking monetary relief from Fleet Farm. In my own mind, that's not enough. You know, I think somebody should go to jail. Nobody seems to be going to jail these days when it comes to gun safety or ignorance. It's like a hole is open. A hole is open that allows people to just walk through and do whatever they want to do with their firearms. And there is no... I don't know. They don't seem to have any way of making sure they go to jail or something.
There's no accountability. And
there
I think as far as there's legislators that you talk about, do they know? They know. 70% of gun deaths in Minnesota are suicide. They know. It's in their districts. They know what's happening. They know communities are being affected. And I can't answer that question for you because I don't have that same mindset in that if there's a mother burying their child unnecessarily, my heart breaks. My first answer is, how do we stop this? How do we help? I don't know how a legislator can kind of shut that off and say Second Amendment or this isn't going to, speak well to my constituents. Well, it's your constituents that are dying.
Yes.
So I don't know how to answer that question to you.
I appreciate that. But I have to tell you, it used to be that all of the violence was happening in the Twin Cities metro area. And it is just... now filtering through so many of the suburbs and exurbs, and we keep saying to ourselves, oh, it's never going to come our way. Well, it's gotten there. It's there. We just don't hear about it. They write about what's happening in the inner city. They don't write about what's happening in the suburbs way out, right? And that's what really bothers me. People stand and say, oh, it's just in those neighborhoods. It's not me, not in my backyard, But it is.
Going back to that 70%, right, it's primarily white men that are committing suicide in rural Minnesota. So this idea of gun violence and suicide is very much in communities across the country and across Minnesota. And the sad thing is a lot of it is young kids.
Right.
And again, I say this as a mother, and I've said it before, this can't be the legacy that we leave them. And as a parent, it's my job to protect them. And they're just... we send kids to school and there's active shooter drills and then there's a suicide component and we're making it so easy for them to access things when their brains aren't fully developed.
Yeah, but we have to come up with repercussions, because the bottom line is it's never going to get better unless somebody, it has to be blamed. And it doesn't have to be one, it can be many, but they ought to, you have young men in prison, black men, boys, that were selling a dime bag of cocaine or a dime bag of marijuana who got 25 years, right? Now you have people, these straw buyers that are, making sure it get into the wrong hands instead of the right hands, and they don't seem to suffer anything. Maybe it's my ignorance, but they don't seem to suffer. What can
change? They do get prison sentences, but the reality is it pales in comparison to the lives lost, right? So it's this idea of, you'll get a couple years in prison, but that doesn't take back the damage that firearm caused. And from our end, we're a prevention organization, so we focus really on, before that straw buyer gets to that point, what can we do? And some of that is looking at laws around, federally licensed gun stores or firearm stores kind of have to keep a record that only they owned. It's not a registry. I just want to put that out there. that this is something that should be really easy to track, right? So it is negligent in the fact that they weren't able to track that, because they are required to keep track of who sells. I think a couple, maybe last summer or the summer before, there was a local gun shop store who was able to catch on to a straw buyer. So they did their due diligence, and they called the police. And so it is very much a negligence on this in this case.
And that was one.
Yeah.
Just one.
Just one.
I don't know. Sometimes my heart wants to, you know, walk away from me and sit down and have a conversation with me, because there's a part of me that allows me to not just get upset, but angry. And I'm not a woman who gets angry. So this mm-hmm. is my challenge as I watch and I read and I see. You can't close your eyes to it anymore. You absolutely have to do something. So what should we do, Rashmi?
The first thing is really to elect individuals who can actually make a difference, who are willing to kind of stand up against this culture of guns over people, right? Like, it's legislators' job to protect us, protect our communities, protect our kids. That's the first step. But, like, the step that I think is most uncomfortable for people is to talk to friends and neighbors about this issue. We need to start talking about mental health and how it's affecting everyone. And we need to start talking about safe gun storage. We need to talk to our kids about guns, that, you know, they aren't toys. Not everyone grows up with guns and doesn't understand that. And what Protect Minnesota is doing is looking at the laws we have and saying, what are the loopholes? Where can we work together to close this? And I will say it's very telling, the organizations that don't work or want to work on this, because you see that, again, this idea of election win or profits over people. And that, to me, is a bigger, you know, crisis that our society is facing, which is probably another call.
Right.
But it's doing, closing the loopholes where we can and working really hard. Again, I go back to making sure that a mom doesn't have to bury her child, whether it's in Pine City or Minneapolis.
Right. Well, everyone seems, I shouldn't say everyone, but so many Minnesotans tend to look at the Twin Cities and go, well, they're the ones with the guns. And it's not so. It's all over the place. And I think that's what we need to bring into focus, is that it's not mm-hmm. just the Twin City urban areas. It is not. And they, you know, people are convinced of it because that's what they read in papers and articles and that sort of thing. But it is so much more than that. And if we could somehow get involved again, because, you know, we've marched to get rid of these guns. We've done everything we think we can. And so as we mm-hmm. keep trying one little piece at a time, it's getting worse. They're making it easier to put it into the hands of those children that should have it. Like, these gangs can, like, throw weapons into a yard to discard it, right? And then, a four-year-old boy comes outside and finds it. You know, it's like, this should never be able to happen. But I agree with you. We have to make sure that our legislators are engaged in the conversation and is willing to do something big to stop it. I don't know what that big is.
It isn't something big. It's all the little things that they could have done and they should have been doing up until now, right? It's closing that loophole with the 3-day wait period. It's ensuring that the ATF has stronger enforcement so they can require gun stores and gun stores to have more stringent regulations. We've just kind of been lazy about it. And I think in some cases people have purposely been lazy. And in other cases, they've created this narrative of, you know, your gun is your identity, it's your manhood. And people are afraid to kind of take that on. And the reality is that it's killing everyone. And it's killing everyone regardless of age, race, socioeconomic status. It's the one thing that just kills freely and it affects everyone. And it's disheartening for us from our side that we can't, like, how many more stories do we have to tell? How many more Uvaldes? How many more Sandy Hooks? How many more Charlestons and Buffaloes do we need to have before something happens?
Rashna Sinavaratna, I am so grateful that you joined us tonight. I hope we can call on you again.
Of course.
Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.